Welcome back to the Flagstick.com Tee Talk Podcast. I'm co-host Scott McLeod, the associate publisher of Flagstick Golf Magazine and a PGA of Canada professional. Stefan Tiedorf, my co-host, is off this week, but he'll be back very soon with a lot of things happening in the golf season. We have certainly a lot to talk about, a lot of great guests to look forward to in coming shows as we head into the fall and into the wintertime as well. But today, on episode 135, we've got an interview I think many of you will find intriguing. As fans of the sport, I'm sure, like me, you appreciate playing new and interesting golf courses. Many of us dream of playing ones that are highly regarded, whether that be from recommendations by friends, colleagues, people we run into, maybe in the golf industry. Many of those actually also come from ranking lists that are put together by media outlets and organizations on a regular basis. And today's guest shares that interest. He's been able to act on it like few other people have. A member of the Golf Digest golf course ranking panel, as well as the one for Score Golf here in Canada, Anthony recently achieved a very special goal. It took some time, but he just completed the playing of the top 100 golf courses in Canada as ranked by Score Golf. And he's joining us on the show to talk about that journey and how golf has enriched his life as well. I think you're going to find it an enlightening interview. It may just leave you wanting to get out there and play a few more golf courses, turning your playing wish list into a real life experience that will become a cherished memory forever. With that all said, here's our interview with Anthony Spagnoli. All right, welcome back to the podcast. We've got a special guest today. He's done something that most golfers really, they dream of really more than anything. He has played almost all the top-ranked golf courses in Canada, those on the Score Top 100 list, and maybe a few more. We want to get him on here because he has just completed his journey of doing the Top 100, and it's a heck of a story of how he did it, everything that's involved in it. And you know what? Anthony Spagnoli, welcome to the show. We're looking forward to hearing what you've got to say.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott. I really appreciate you having me.
Some people are going to be familiar, obviously, with the top 100 list that Scores Golf has done for quite some time. Not everybody is, but for average golfers, they probably, maybe put us up to speed as far as how the top 100 happened and what it's all about.
Yeah. So, I guess way back, the inception of Score in 1980, Score Golf has really been known for creating lists of the top 100 in Canada and the biannual year, the top 59 public. So there's a panel of about 100 raters across Canada, different provinces that go out and play golf at all these beautiful golf courses. And not only the ones on the list, but other ones that maybe have merit to be on the list or you've heard of or people talk about. And, we rank them and that's how these lists are formed.
Okay. So before we get to that, because there's a whole lot to unpack there, let's get an idea of who you are, because a lot of people are going to maybe assume that, everybody that's on this list is, some high-end golfer or, they're independently wealthy and they're running around all over the place or they're a golf pro or something like that. But, who are you? What do you do? How'd you get into golf? And then let's lead it into how you got involved with doing this list.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, I'm actually a firefighter full time. I have been for 26 years now in Vaughan, and obviously all of the days off that firefighters have, as everyone knows, gives me the ability to play golf. I started probably when I was 14 years old. My uncle took me out and I instantly fell in love with it. Back in the days where, remember, Vaughan Valley, Eddie Shack's golf course there at Rutherford and Highway 50, yeah. And Pleasure Park, the par 3 golf course that was at 400 and Highway 7. I just couldn't get enough, right? So,
What was it about it that attracted you? I mean, was there some sort of thread there of, some appeal about the golf courses itself that, sort of started back then, do you think?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it was just a feeling that I got, that, wow, this is incredible, and being able to have that challenge. And yeah, I do remember looking at the land and the holes, and as you know, Vaughn Valley, remember, had that big par three down the hill. Yeah. And, you know, then you get into some other golf courses and all of a sudden you're going, wow, wow, wow. And yeah, I just kept playing golf and, you know, ended up taking lessons, as you know, obviously a lot of people should do.
Yes. And,
right, Scott? Everybody thinks the clubs are going to make a difference.
Of course. We don't buy golf equipment, we buy hope.
That's right. So, you know, I started taking lessons and then, you know, ended up getting better and then, you know, played some Golf Ontario events and, you know, the Toronto Star and qualified for that. And yeah, just kind of seeing different golf courses at those tournaments, that's what really opened my eyes. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, there are different levels of golf courses here in this world. So
how then did you get involved with the panel? Because obviously for a lot of people, I mean, as you said, there's just over 100 people on this panel. So it's a pretty small group. Again, it's something that people would go, man, I'd really want to be on that to play all these golf courses. But how did you get involved?
You know, it was really luck. Peter Mumford, I think, used to run those be a member for a day at clubs, and I'd never played the pulpit. And, you know, I played the event and I met a guy who is now one of my best friends, John Wolchinski. And he, you know, I was playing pretty good at the time and he was guiding me around. And, you know, I think I shot 74 that day, and he says, wow, hey, you know, I'm a panelist for Score Golf. You're a firefighter. You don't work much. You know, you're interested in playing golf with me. So I said, yeah, absolutely. And then that's when, you know, it really opened my eyes to, you know, Score Golf and, you know, what it really meant to be a panelist and how, you know, how much of a privilege it really is. And, you know, he took me along and I played, you know, quite a few golf courses with him to build my resume of golf courses that were on the list. And then met Jason Logan. You know, we played golf a few times. He's obviously the editor for Score Golf. And, you know, I think he really saw my passion and love for golf course architecture and just kind of looking at the golf courses. And, you know, I shared my interest and I applied and you know, ended up getting on the panel. So really, if I wasn't there that day with, you know, with JW, I might not have been on the panel. I don't know.
That's pretty good. Before then you got on the panel, obviously, as you said, you were starting to play a lot more around different golf courses. And, you know, was there something that you were seeing at golf courses that time that, again, you know, attracted you to playing them? I mean, what was your big appeal for you to play a golf course, for example?
So there was a few different ones. I mean, obviously the challenge of a different look, a different feel, different holes. And, you know, I think also just wanting to play all of them to see the difference in these golf courses and what the clubhouses looked like and what everybody would talk about, you know. And yeah, that was the big appeal. Just get to see it, play it, feel it. And, you know, I collected logo balls at the time. So every golf course I played was a logo ball, and I put it on my rack and I cross it off and let's get to the next one.
So, that's awesome. Let's explain maybe a little bit of the process. Again, a lot of people are not really familiar, and I've had that discussion with Jason a few times. You know, some people will think that, you know, you just show up, you get treated great, you know, away you go. But, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into doing this process. Why don't you explain a little bit of maybe what a normal year would look like as far as, you know, courses that you play, how you evaluate them, what's that process like?
Sure. So it is quite complicated, you know, as you mentioned. First and foremost, I mean, you know, one of Jason Logan's big things is that he wants panelists to not only play golf, you know, around their area, but if you are going to be on the panel, he really does want you to travel and, you know, take it seriously. This isn't just a gig to say I have access to, you know, to different golf courses. You know, in saying that, I mean, we've been on so many different golf trips, you know, myself and Johnny or other panelists, or even on my own, where, you know, let's say out west. You know, you're trying to plan a trip and, you know, you're gone for maybe 7 or 8 days. You're trying to plan a couple of golf courses a day just to maximize the time. A lot of time, those are also maybe planned when daylight time is a little bit more. So, you know, we're reaching out to the golf courses. We are, you know, asking their availability. I mean, you know, some of them have men's nights, events, tournaments. So, you know, trying to plan and arrange all those courses geographically. And once the clubs, you know, get back to you that they would like to host you, then yeah, the travel, you need to plan that as well. So, you know, Score Golf doesn't pay us panelists to, you know, our travel and accommodations or any of that. So yeah. we definitely, you know, all the airlines or ferries and hotels and food, that's on us. I mean, the golf courses we're very fortunate that host us. And so that's a great, great privilege. But yeah, there's a lot of cost involved too. I mean, you know, back in 2019, when I made the couple trips out west and, you know, I think a trip to Montreal, you know, probably cost me, well, not probably, I know it cost me almost $7,000, right?
Yeah.
Just to, but again, it's just a privilege to be able to say that I belong to a panel that, you know, I'm one of 100 people or so that have a say in what I think should be top 100.
And then, you know, when you do the evaluation process, you know, afterwards, you know, how extensive is that? What are some of the factors that sort of come into play when you, you know, finish at a golf course, for example?
Yes. So, you know, the categories that we rank a golf course in are beauty, strategy, design, challenge, par threes, par fours, par fives, and fun.
Yeah. You're not ranking best clubhouse, which people should figure out, or, you know, prestige or some other factors. This is really the basis. And this is why it's really important for people to understand this, because, you know, there's obviously endless questions that come after the rankings come out that people go, oh, well, they did that because of that. But, you know, really, this is the essence of what it is. It's not really about all the frilly stuff. It's about really the core of the golf course.
Absolutely, Scott. It's, you know, as we always say, it's the first tee to the 18th green. You know, it's not clubhouse. It's not driving range. It's not, you know, any of that stuff. It's first tee to the 18th green. And we, you know, take into consideration all of those components. So within, let's say, par threes, par fours, par fives, you're looking at, you know, let's say, did the par threes have different looks? Were you hitting different clubs, or did they all play the same yardage? You know, do they make sense? What are the pinnable options on these greens? You know, is there a lot of variety, or, you know, is the green so manufactured and contoured that you could really only put a pin in three places? And also, how does the course play for a golf pro, scratch player, right to, you know, a senior, a junior, anyone that's playing forward tees? So in each one of those categories, you're definitely looking at a lot.
Yeah, I think people have to remember when you're going to these golf courses, you're just not just going there to shoot a score, right? You're there evaluating it. And I've seen, you know, a number of the panelists in at golf clubs and doing the evaluation process. And it's always interesting to see them with their notebooks out and going through. And, you know, as I said, it's not a round of golf that they're just, you know, copping at some golf course for free and, you know, shooting their score and having some beers in the patio and running out of there. It's you know, it's a job really as far as that evaluation process.
Absolutely. I mean, I know myself and panelists and, you know, it's serious, right? Because you are evaluating courses. And, you know, if anyone asks me about my evaluations for any golf course, I can justify it. I mean,
right.
I take pictures everywhere I go. That way, when I'm rating a golf course, you know, obviously it's great for Instagram, but I'm also taking pictures to look back at it. You know, maybe there was something that didn't make sense, or a really neat green contours, or the bunkering, or holes and things that I want to remember. And I take my notes. So, yeah, I mean, I was asked before, oh, what's the lowest round you've ever shot? And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, I'm there to rate it. I'm really not paying attention to what I shoot. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you'll, you know, maybe take, you know, extra pitch shots or extra putts just to see how they roll in different spots. Right. So certainly we take a lot into consideration. the one thing I got to add, which I'm asked all the time, you guys, it just, you rate something based on how you play. If you play well, you rate it high. And I can tell you that is not the case. I've been beat up at golf courses and I can't wait to get back to them. Or I've, you know, played really well and don't really care to ever play it again. So
yeah, I saw one member of the panel one time at the, he was at the Ottawa Hunt Club, and I think he proceeded to hit four balls in the water on this one par three. And he said, that's my favorite hole. So that tells you right away that, you know, it's not based on score or, you know, did you like that hole because you put a nice number on the scorecard. Now, you're a little bit different than maybe some of the other panelists in the fact that you've actually played the top 100, which we mentioned off the top. Not everybody really has that opportunity. Some, as you said, will spread their wings and get out across the country as much as they can. And most of them have that are on the panel, but not all of them can say that they've done that top 100. Was it a mission for you to do that top 100? And, you know, how long did you think it was going to take? How long did it take? And what were the goods and bads of trying to chase that top 100?
Oh man, it's interesting because obviously, you know, when I got on the panel and started playing the golf courses, I mean, it at one point at the beginning thought, boy, oh boy, like this is never going to happen. Like, I didn't realize how big Canada was. Yeah. And I know that sounds, you know, maybe a bit weird, but boy, oh boy, like from Victoria Island all the way to Newfoundland and everything in between, how am I going to get to these places and so on and so forth? So, you know, some people know my story about, you know, having been off the fire service with PTSD and getting help for that. And while I was doing that, this actually kept me going, right? It really gave me something to wake up to and look forward to. And, you know, I think that's when it really began, you know, to be a mission, you know, and my buddy Luke out in Edmonton had just finished the list as well. And I was kind of envious of him and, and, you know, also all the stories that, you know, that I would hear from him and see the crazy trips he was taking. So, yeah, I'm very thankful that, you know, I have a very, how do I say it? Very, you know, giving wife and
forgiving and for knows, sure.
Yes, forgiving. Yeah, very much so. And I just started knocking these courses off, and a lot of my travel was with John Wolchinski, and we literally just started making trips, and I would say, okay, location wise what makes sense. But in saying that, like, I mean, there's trips out west that we've played, you know, 11 rounds in 6 days and red eye home. And, you know, this last trip that we took, you know, down east, I flew into PEI, played Green Gables. Then the next day played Crowbush Dunderave, then drove down to Pugwash to play Northumberland Lynx that I know we shared. That's one of the biggest hidden gems in Canada.
For sure.
You know, and then played there and had to, you know, 4 hour drive to Cabot, 3 rounds at Cabot, the overnight ferry to Newfoundland, played Newfoundland and then, you know, or Humber Valley, and then flew home, you know, the next day. So for everybody that thinks, oh, it must be cool to be a panelist. Like, I mean, it's not easy to, you know, to get to all these golf courses. So little by little, I plugged away and, you know, had a lot of support, a lot of help, a lot of, you know, great clubs and great people that, you know, helped along the way, you know, gain access to some of these clubs that maybe, you know, weren't really looking for Raiders and or to make it accommodating to the time frame we were there. So, yeah.
Well, there's no way that you could do all that travel. And I know this from experience of doing media trips and stuff over the years, but there had to be some travel nightmare story within that of some circumstance doing some trip where you thought, oh my God, I don't need to be doing this right now. Can I believe this is actually happening right now? Got to be one. Let's hear it.
You know, but I've been very lucky that I can only say the last trip was one of those trips with COVID. I mean, COVID's changed everything in so many ways. I remember, you know, filling out all the documents because I was going to be in three provinces, you know, Nova Scotia, PEI, Newfoundland. So I thought everything was cool. Well, I fly to Charlottetown and everybody that enters get COVID tests. And I literally was so scared. And I thought, I need this final trip to finish my top 100. And what if I, you know, happen to be asymptomatic and test I've never been as stressed out. And then on top of that, Hurricane Larry was blowing up. And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like if they close Crowbush, I mean, I need that course. And then they kept canceling the overnight ferries to get to Newfoundland. And I'm here thinking, oh my God, like this is way too much stress for this. Like I feel less stressed running into a burning building sometimes. Right. And I'm like, this is brutal. So I got to say it was probably this last trip with everything involved travel wise, storm wise, COVID wise that, yeah, I really felt the heat.
Yeah, I guess so, in more ways than one. Did you have it planned going back a little bit when you started to get your list a little bit shorter of where you wanted to finish?
Honestly, I did not. Okay. It was literally, I always remember flying to Saskatoon, you know, playing Dakota Dunes and then Riverside, which is, in my opinion, another great golf course that's not talked about enough. You know, going to, you know, Glencoe, Pritis, Cranbrook, I played Wildstone and then drove all the way back to Calgary to play Mickelson National and flew home. And I remember my wife saying, you only have two more, like, are you going to go? And I said, well, there's other courses I want to play, so I'm going to hang tight. And then COVID hit. So,
wow.
You know, I really felt, I mean, look, people are losing their lives and jobs and, you know, this isn't really comparable, but man, with my story and, you know, how bad I wanted to complete this list, not being able to go for, you know, after that, I was kicking myself.
And it was a 6-year journey. We should say that it was 6 years for you to do that. Right. So it wasn't like overnight or, you know, you're not doing this in 2 years. This is a long project to make this happen.
Yes. Yes. And I didn't know where it was going to end, but, you know, I remember being at Cabot, you know, in 2016 saying, wow, that would have been a cool place to finish. But, you know, I was back there this year and then finished it at Humber Valley, which was kind of neat. I was, you know, kind of a really good spot to finish.
Yeah. Beautiful one for sure. You know, one thing is that in that 6-year process, and as we, you know, kind of go along and do things, we always change as far as perspectives of different things. Anthony 6 years ago versus Anthony now, when you think about golf, when you think about this country, what did doing this quest change for you in your perspective?
Well, it changed it in many ways. I think one, just appreciating how beautiful our country is. I really would have never seen any of this because, you know, summertime, you're usually here and then you try to get away in the winter. So to be able to actually see, you know, the Rockies and just literally Victoria and so many fantastic, you know, provinces, places, golf courses, the history that we have, right? I mean, you go to some courses and, you know, just at Algonquin, St. Andrews by the sea there, you know, with that oldest clubhouse in Canada that's perched there right before, you know, between 17 and 18 and, you know, going to Cherry Hill and seeing, you know, the drawings, you know, that are there. So it changed a lot. I've learned a lot, you know, even in terms of golf and architecture and courses and really, you know, rating in generals. I think I've learned a lot and appreciate, you know, everything that I had the opportunity to see. Even sometimes, you know, of course, rating first tee to the 18th green, but there are some really neat clubhouses and experiences, you know, in Canada.
Yeah. And obviously people that go with that as well. I mean, you know, 2,400 golf courses, but, you know, there's 3,500 golf pros, let alone GMs, superintendents, everybody else that goes with those properties. And those are people that you interact with when we're making these trips.
You're absolutely right. I just wanted to say that as well. I'm very fortunate to have met so many great people everywhere, you know, whom I still keep in touch with, whether it's Instagram, text, call, or have hooked up with again in other places. And that is really a neat part of it as well.
I had a friend who was mentioning to me, I was mentioning what we were going to be doing and talking about. And his question was, does he feel or does he become more of a golf snob per se afterwards, you know, playing all these top golf courses? Does it change maybe your perception of what golf is, or can you still go to the, you know, the local muni course and still have an appreciation for that?
you know what, I definitely can go and have an appreciation for golf anywhere. You know, you don't want to lose sight of what golf is, how things were made, constructed, the land it's on, the changes. I think that's all really, really neat. But yeah, once you play these phenomenal golf courses all the time, you definitely get used to the, you know, condition and challenge and the scale that they're on. And yeah, you know, I don't want to say you become a golf snob, but
his words not mine.
I can't argue with him. Yeah. You know, like you get used to you get used to playing top courses. It's definitely hard or different when you're playing elsewhere.
I'm not going to ask you your favorite course because I know you get asked that all the time. But is there one or two experiences that, you know, if you look back over those, you know, that top 100 and other golf courses that you've played that maybe stand out for you? You know, it could be for a golf reason. It could be not for a golf reason. Of just, you know, maybe it just spoke to you spiritually or something in making that trip that you thought, man, this is a place I want to come back to again for a particular reason.
Oh man, that is such a difficult question, Scott. And you're right. I get asked all the time, and you know, me talking about one or two golf courses ends up babbling into, you know, 20 or 30 of them because there's so many great experiences. I mean, you know, everybody that knows me, you know, you say, mention a couple favorite spots. I mean, the National Golf Club of Canada for me, you know, I always say to people, you know, they used to have the bag tag, I was there. And I wish they kept it because, you know, for me, it's true. It's like, it's cool. I was there.
Wasn't the bag tag, I shot 100 at the National for the front nine?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? Doesn't matter how bad it was in terms of game. I finished 18 and I couldn't wait to get back on the first tee, you know.
That's good.
But, you know, Cabot's a special place, you know, just kind of the feeling that you get there when you talk about spiritually, you know, that's probably the, you know, the spot that is just kind of overwhelmed you in a way. But, oh God, you know, like Jasper, just thinking about how Thompson and how they would have created that.
You're just making Jason Logan happy here talking about Jasper nonstop.
Yeah, I know that's his favorite place for sure. But then, you know, I get into some of the ones that, you know, Blackhawk in Edmonton. Mm. I mean, I got there and I was like, wow, like, I mean, I can't believe there's not more discussion about this place. Or, you know, St. Andrews by the Sea that I mentioned earlier. You know, and then the favorites, you know, I'm lucky to be in Ontario. And, you know, I mean, whether it's Toronto Golf Club, St. George's, you know, the Pulpit Club, Coppinwood, I mean, the list goes on of golf courses that, you know, I love playing.
We're pretty blessed, that's for sure. Question though, you know, we mentioned a little bit about Northumberland Links, and again, you know, there's other golf courses that, you know, are not on the list but may have potential to be on there or could be on their top 59 public list for score. Have there been any golf courses kind of along the way that you found just traveling that maybe you popped into and you thought, oh, that's pretty cool, there's a course I've never even heard of before, but yeah, it's a neat spot to see?
Well, Northumberland Links, that to me was the biggest, I mean, shocker. You know, I mean, Johnny, you know, told me about it, and I know RT was there, and, you know, they're the only guys that I really heard talk about it. And we pulled up and I immediately started taking pictures. And I remember looking at John without even playing it yet going, are you kidding me? And, you know, once you start seeing the greens and the green complexes and the bunker positioning and, you know, even the interior holes, like I was just blown away. I thought that was probably the biggest surprise. You know, Talking Rock was like that for me too out west before it, you know, came on the top 59, where I'm like, why aren't more people talking about this? But then again, right, you know, Canada's big, there's a lot of travel involved, there's a lot of places to get to, and sometimes, yeah, it's just hard to get to all of them. But
So where do you go from here? I mean, obviously, you got to keep rating golf courses, you're keeping traveling, you have some trips and things like that you want to do, but are there further goals for you as far as golf courses that you want to play in Canada or worldwide? Because I know you're involved as well with the Golf Digest panelists as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to make more trips in Canada. I mean, Sagebrush just reopened. I'd love to get to it. You know, obviously, Mickelson National's evolved. Vancouver Golf Club is now open to, you know, having panelists. So I'd love to get out there because I hear so many good things about it. So, you know, there's definitely places I would like to see that I haven't seen, you know, and some other ones that, you know, that I really, really enjoyed and love that, you know, if I'm in the area, we'll get back to. And yeah, I honestly can't wait, you know, to start traveling in the US again. And, you know, with the border kind of being closed, I, you know, have played some great golf courses in the States. And yeah, I definitely have many lists I'd like to accomplish, you know, in the US as well.
And is it difficult for you now to go and play a golf course and not be scanning it from a Raider perspective? Or can you just go to a course and just enjoy it? If it's not, you know, during one of your trips where you're specifically going for rating.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, if I'm out with a bunch of buddies or, you know, at a member guest that I just played with my good friend, Ray at Coppinwood, I mean, you're just out there having a blast, but you know, that Raider mind and vision is always there. It's hard not to, you know, pick up on, you know, oh, that bunker's new or, oh, the, you know, it's, I think it's just in you once you do it for a while. And, but I can certainly have fun with my friends and just enjoy myself. Right.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you know what? I appreciate you coming on. Certainly it's been nice to get to know you over the years and it's been interesting to follow your journey. And it's always great to get your feedback on golf courses as well. And, you know, for a fellow golfer, it's great to live through your exploits as well, even though I get to play a few good golf courses, but man, you've gotten and done something that a lot of people really want to do, you know, and they wish that they're able to do. And, you know, you've done it in a very humble manner and an informative manner. And I'm sure certainly Jason Logan's pretty happy to have you as a panelist.
Oh, thanks, Scott. I really appreciate it. I've learned a lot from, you know, a lot of great people, including yourself. And yeah, it's always nice. It's all about learning. And I'm just grateful Jason gave me that opportunity years ago. And I told him I wouldn't disappoint, and there you go.
I think you've lived up to your end of the bargain. So again, appreciate it. I look forward actually to getting a game sometime. We can maybe explore a golf course that you haven't played before, maybe who knows where, but I would certainly welcome that for sure.
Absolutely. That would be incredible.
All right. Well, I really hope you enjoyed that. I know I certainly did. Just want to thank Anthony once again for taking the time to visit with us at the flagstick.com Tee Talk podcast. It's a heck of an accomplishment to play all the courses that he has. I have a lot of respect for how he goes about taking on the task of being on these ranking panels. Thanks to all of you as well. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, be sure to give us some feedback. You can find us, the Tee Talk podcast, on Instagram, or you can reach out to me as well via any of the Flagstick Golf social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, you name it. If you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a show. Also, if you can let your friends know about us, that would be great. We'd really appreciate it. Every little bit helps us to grow and continue to make this content. Thanks for listening. Hope you can join us next week for the flagstick.com Tee Talk podcast.